Today's episode of Blastburn Radio was brought to you by Ryan, Mackie Grad, Grey Took, and other listeners just like you. If you'd like to support Blastburn Radio, you can do so over at patreon.com/challengeaccepted media. You can pledge your support and start earning exclusive rewards today. Thank you.
They said, look, you're a bomb, and I'm going to bring you to be a bomb. Do you understand? And she was like, I love you. You could do no wrong to me. I love naive Pokemon. It's great.
Did you get more wood?
Oh, yeah.
I had a strategy of just feeding my Marowak all the drugs.
That's not medical advice. I'm not liable. Podcasts aren't real.
You are now listening to Blast Burn Radio.
Hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of Blastburn Radio. I'm your host, Stephen Charbonneau, and joining me today for this very special episode is our best Poke Pal, our battle buddy, Anna Maservier. Thanks for joining me, Anna. How's it going?
It's going pretty good, actually. Lots of stuff going on in my real life, which is maybe not so good, but I mean, there's Pokemon on the horizon. That's always good.
There is indeed. I told you guys we would be back sooner rather than later as new games were on the horizon, and they're almost here. And I've missed you guys, like genuinely and truly. I have missed our BBR community, our Poke Pals, and we're all really excited to pick up a new game experience. Even if it has been a roller coaster of emotion, kind of watching what those games are and what they're turning into evolve over the last like month and a half of announcements and no announcements. And why are there no announcements? And oh God, they're leaking. And oh God, here's all the data mines. Oh God. Oh gee. Oh fuck. That we've been living through. It's been a whole lot. There's been a lot. Of course, as soon as we put the show on hiatus, there's a ton of really interesting Pokemon shit to talk about. We've had the guy who made PK Hex throwing shade at the VGC community for using the software that he made, which is wild. It's a wild flex. And we could have done a whole goddamn episode about that, but it's in the past now. We are here. It is Sinnoh time, ladies and gentlemen. We got our stupid fucking page boy hats on, and we are ready to listen to some smooth jazz pianos and head into Mount Coronet, I guess.
I need Don's beanie. It's the one hat I think I've ever liked in Pokemon.
I unironically genuinely love Don's beanie. In our most recent character art, I was just like, just give me Don's hat, but green. And he did, and it was great. Yeah, Dawn has the superior headwear. Don't at me. But yeah, it's been a little bit. It's been a while since we wrapped our Pokemon X and Y series. So I guess let's just catch up a little bit before we really dive in. Annabeth, how's your Poke life going? What's new for you in the world of Pokemon?
What's new for me in the world of Pokemon? I just went through, we just had a tournament here to celebrate the release, upcoming release of BDSP. We did a little Nuzlocke competition with the community where we played through the original games. And just like in our series, folks who complete said challenge are taking their championship teams to a little tournament before we launch on our next Sinnoh adventure. Our first of two Sinnoh adventures. I actually sped through my gameplay. Like, we started, 3 weeks ago? And I just didn't have the time. And then I was like, shit, I want to do this. Sinnoh's my favorite region. And so Sunday, I started and I finished about 3 hours ago. It is currently Friday. So I did a whole Nuzlocke in 5 days, y'all. It's been wild, but it was a lot of fun. I totally brought a dinosaur to the end.
That's really rad. I wiped out, unfortunately. I had a bad time because Gen 4 is hard, actually, on the spectrum. To the degree that Pokemon games are allowed to be hard, the DS era games were hard, actually. And I got my booty butt cheeks absolutely clapped. So congratulations, Annabeth, on making it through. You're definitely in the minority of our community. I don't know how large that tournament bracket is going to wind up being this weekend, but I'm guessing not very.
Yeah, I don't think there'll be too many people who have made it through. There have been a lot of wipes. Like, Stephen and I were talking about this earlier, and we do Nuzlockes, like, once or twice a year with very hard rule sets competitively, where we have to always be thinking about all this stuff that we just didn't have to do this time around. Like, we don't have to worry about hard mode gyms. What a relief that was. I was like, I can super effective move these gyms.
Super effective moves go burr, indeed. They do. They do go burr.
I hit things, they die. I don't have to two-hit KO everything in existence. It was wild.
Well, that's cool. That's really cool. I have been pretty heavy back into Pokemon in the last couple of weeks. I suffer from seasonal depression, and so when we hit the switch where it went from, hey, it's summer, to, hey, it's dark at 5 p.m. with nothing in between, like, not even, like, one, like, oh, nice, it's a little crisp fall day, just from it's beautiful to dark and dead everywhere, I got real, like, kind of bummed out, and so I reached for the media that brings me, like, comfort and joy in my life, which has meant a lot of Pirates of the Caribbean, a lot of Star Wars, and a lot of Pokemon over the last couple of weeks. And I have been finishing out my, like, final Pokemon Sword file, which I had started over, like, largely actually because I needed to complete Crown Tundra on it. I needed to take the other forks on all the legendary choices and get myself a Glastrier and a Regidrago and all that good stuff. And so I was like, well, I'll play through the game again. And I had decided that I was, because I'm extra as shit and can't just play a video game, I bred myself like 9 different shiny bug type friends that I love dearly and was like, I'll use a mono bug shiny team. And so I finally finished that run, which is rad because when I log into it, I'm greeted by myself in like the bug gym uniform surrounded by my children. And it's glorious. I've got like my shiny Galisapod and my Vikavolt and my Durant and my Ribombee because I was like, I have to have at least one cute one or else I'm just Linkin Park, the Pokemon trainer. And that's not fun. So I've got the Ribombee and it's good. I love it a lot, but I've been kind of wrapping up that save file. I tracked down all 151 of the fucking Diglets on the Isle of Armor. I don't need them. I don't need those Alolan forms. I sure as fuck did not need an Alolan Diglett for tracking down 150 other Alolan fucking Diglets, but I did it, goddammit, because 100% brain. But that's been good. That's been really good. I fell down a rabbit hole today, literally today, where I was looking at it and I realized, okay, well, we now know that at least as things currently stand, BDSP are going to have like the Kanto through the Sinnoh decks, like 1 through 493. All of those are going to be in the code. So I was like, this would be a really fun time, I think, to try to complete a living shiny decks to breed or catch a shiny of every Pokemon available specifically in BDSP because that cuts that list down to about half. It makes it much more manageable. And so then I was like, okay, well, I can shiny hunt Celebi in Crystal. That would be fun. I could do that. And then I was like, I wonder what else I could get in Crystal that would be like an easier or more manageable shiny hunt. And I realized for the first time in a long time, if not the first time ever, that Crystal has the best shiny hunting rates of the entire series. And so like now I'm like deep diving on Gen 1 and 2 Virtual Console to complete a shiny dex in Gen 2 to transfer up because this is just the life that I live now.
You're breaking my brain.
I've got a whole Pepe Silva board. It's fine. It's gonna be good.
I was speaking of BBR and old content, I was watching some old highlights on my Twitch page earlier, which is as a point of note, as a trans person, is wild to me because I go back and like watch stuff from 2020 and like it's like watching my brother on the screen. It's absolutely like brain fake, but doing like hard mode Erica in Gen 1 yellow and just being like, oh fuck, I've been wrapped. I've been eternally wrapped. I can't get out. I'm just gonna sit here and die.
Oh, Gen 1. Oh, Gen 1. It is... it is definitely a Pokemon game. No one can take that from it.
What was it you told me the other day when we were talking about Sinnoh and we were talking about Luxray?
Oh, that Luxray is the Linkin Park of Pokemon. Yes.
Yeah. It made me laugh so much because I never thought of it that way before, and now I can't unthink it.
We were talking about how there's a very, very mid-2000s, mid-aughts aesthetic to Gen 4 and 5 designs, especially Gen 4 designs. Like, Gen 4 designs either look like they just stepped off the front of a Linkin Park album cover or a Limp Bizkit album cover, and there's nothing in between. And those might sound like similar things to you if you did not live through the mid-aughts. They are not. Those are very distinct aesthetics.
it's so true, too. Like, I was looking at Luxray earlier because I had one in my run for most of it. And its attack stat is fucking phenomenal. And then you go look at its learn set and, like, what it can pick up from TMs, and it's hot garbage. It's nothing. And all I can hear in the background is, I tried so hard. It got so far, but in the end, it didn't even matter. I'm like, oh my God, Steven was right.
I occasionally I'm onto some hot shit. But yeah, we're here to talk about Sinnoh and about BDSP. And this is you're at the top of the episode, spoiler warning, because, if you're not aware, these games, as Pokemon games tend to do a week or two before launch, they have leaked utterly and fully. There are complete ROM files floating around the internet, that have been data mined now pretty thoroughly, not completely. And that's important to remember, especially when it comes to like the more minute things, as far as like Pokemon locations and encounter rates and move sets and things like that, that are just big tables that are sometimes, depending on how they're coded, a little ambiguous and can be misinterpreted or sometimes need to be patched. Although the launch patch is out now, so that's less likely to be an issue or a concern, but still possible. And it's important to bear in mind and remember. Now, we're not going to be like diving deep into leaked content, as is kind of our standard policy here on the show. Like, we don't shy away from talking about it when it's relevant, but we don't spoil things just to spoil them either. But this episode is kind of a crossover episode, actually, between the BBR main show and our old good friend, Showdown Spotlight, because we had talked months back about doing like a predictive episode talking about like how we think that the competitive metagame of BDSP might develop. And ultimately we had decided that there were just too many unknown factors. Like we could make speculative guesses, but without knowing at least some of those answers, like we're really just pissing into the wind, right? Like there's no foundation for that guessing to take place in. But with these leaks, we got a lot of those questions answered, at least tentatively. And so now we felt much more comfortable revisiting that concept and coming back to talk about what we think the state of the competitive landscape in Brilliant Diamond and Shining Pearl might look like. So just briefly, I would like to give a brief rundown of kind of some of the key questions about BDSP from a competitive standpoint that we now know the answers to. And let's get the bad news out of the way first. Starting with the worst news and getting progressively less bad, I guess. So the worst news here is that unfortunately, the battle timer has not gone anywhere. In fact, it's gone invisible is where it's gone, which if anything makes it substantially worse, because there is still a 20-minute battle timer for all multiplayer battles, but now you can't even watch it ticking down. You just get down to about 30 seconds and it goes, hey, the battle's about to be done, fuck you, which sucks. It sucks shit. I did not expect that to be a thing to go away in this particular game, especially since it is fairly clear that the battle system is more or less straight imported from Sword and Shield. But it still sucks, and it's worth knowing. If you were holding out hope that this was going to be the game to solve that particular problem, unfortunately, it is not. Moving from there, we also do know now that our friend Team Preview is here to stay. There was some hope among portions of the community who enjoyed like the seeming randomness of a non-team preview format from Gen 4 and prior, that with these being, quote, faithful remakes, we would go back to a metagame with no team preview. That is not the case. Team Preview is here. These games function in battle very similarly to modern titles. So sets that were very like lead specific, for instance, like Stealth Rock's Explosion as Elf, that lost a lot of prominence with Team Preview, are not likely to see a huge resurgence here, just because of their lack of flexibility. We also now know that the Pokedex in Brilliant Diamond and Shining Pearl is not as limited as we feared that it might have been, but is also not as expansive as we might have wanted it to be. My concern was always that the BDSP Pokedex was going to be like the Sinnoh regional Dex Mon only. Like the 150 or so Mon that are available in Sinnoh, that is what you have to play with. Deal with it. Eat shit, Buttercup. And that would have sucked. That would have been a bad metagame, actually. And that's not what we have to deal with. Instead, the Pokedex of BDSP is locked to the Kanto, Johto, Hoenn and Sinnoh regional Pokedexes. In short, it's the same as what the national Pokedex was in Generation 4 when these games were new.
The good old Sinnoh minus.
Yeah, so the Pokemon that will be available either through the game itself or through transfer once Pokemon Home becomes available, because Pokemon Home is going to link up and transfer both ways will be available, is going to be number one, Bulbasaur. All the way through number 493? Yes, all the way through 493, Arceus. I got that in one. Hot damn. So yeah, that is our playground. That is what we have. That does not include regional forms. So I was kind of hopeful that we would at least get access to the Galarian and maybe even Alolan forms of some of those Pokemon. We don't. At least not currently. It's possible that that will come in a future patch. But at launch, that information is not within the game code. Lastly, and perhaps most importantly, and perhaps most positively, these games will feature truly modern battle mechanics. This includes things like the fairy typing, obviously, Clefable and Togekiss Lovers Rejoice. This also includes more modern movesets. Move availability is not the same as it was in Sword and Shield, but it is closer to Sword and Shield than it is to Sun and Moon. This also notably includes hidden abilities, which will be available again either by transfer. They are also available for capture via Poke Radar, and the ability patch item that was introduced in the DLC aspects, I guess, of Pokemon Sword and Shield is also available in Brilliant Diamond Shining Pearl, as well as nature mints and bottle caps. So like truly modern competitive conveniences, as well as like strategies and mechanics, are all present within this game. So with that said, looking at that information on paper, there's a lot to digest here, because just those additions of hidden abilities, of abilities that have been added over the years, of new moves, and of the fairy typing, like that substantially changes the competitive field of these games from what it was during Generation 4. There are a lot of strategies that did not exist in Gen 4 Pokemon that are dominant in the modern game. And the reverse is also true. There are things that have been dominating competitive Pokemon for years that are suddenly cut with the Pokedex cut down to 493. So that's going to be what we're going to talk a little bit about tonight, is just who the big winners and the big losers of these changes are, and what types of strategies we think, with our small, dumb monkey brains, might see substantial play and substantial success in the competitive scene of these new titles. And I have just talked a whole fucking lot. So Annabeth, let's start with you. Who do you think is going to shift meaningfully and interestingly in this exciting new metagame?
I mean, I think one of the most interesting changes from a Gen 4 competitive outlook, I guess, is like one of the biggest problems with Gen 4, like when it was out, was that there weren't a lot of good Garchomp counters. But with fairy type in, like that becomes less of a concern overall, particularly when you consider folks like Clefable existed in this here game, who's really been resistant to power creep despite its early appearance in Pokemon. Like a lot of Gen 1 Mon fell off pretty early, but Clefable is still great in the modern game, and in a more limited meta will be even more so with fairy type.
Oh, absolutely. And like, really, not even just Garchomp, Dragon type as a whole. You know, the Lotties were Ubers in Gen 4. I believe Salamence was too. I'm not sure. I could be wrong about that. Salamence could have just been the poor man's Garchomp that took over. But like, yeah, like Dragon as a typing was really, really dominant in Gen 4, and for a lot of really good reasons, right? Because outside of Heatran, Steel was not a dominant typing because it was so passive. And with no resistances and with the immunity not being, or no, with no immunities and with the resistance not being particularly popular, Dragon Spam was just a really, really powerful strategy. And obviously the introduction of Fairy not only disrupts that very directly, but it also empowers steel types, particularly offensive steel types, which provides its own check to dragons. So yeah, I think that Garchomp is absolutely one of the big winners here. It's a big winner by getting slightly weaker, which means it's not going to be stuck in the shadow realm of Ubers, never seeing play. Also, yes, I was correct. Salamence was also banned. So all the best dragons were.
All the best dragons not appearing in this game back in Gen 4 competitive. But yeah, the addition of fairy type is a really big deal. And by virtue of the addition of fairy type, your poison types, which exist in the region, which are interesting, Pokemon like Skuntank and Roserade become a lot more viable overall to threaten fairies out. So I think that's great. I love Roserade and I love me a Skuntank. But it used to kind of be like, what am I going to do with this Skuntank? Well, now you have something to do with it. You don't have to worry about so many generations of Pokemon after making you completely useless.
100%. Yeah, like there's going to be, I think a lot of interesting picks, particularly in the early meta, but even and maybe especially as it evolves, we're going to see some interesting stuff rise to prominence. Let's talk about weather for a minute. Let's talk about weather strategies, because weather has been a dominant strategy since Generation 5, when it moved out of the Ubers tier with the addition of more weather-setting abilities and weather-abusing abilities becoming available outside of legendary Pokemon. Has been dominant in both singles and in VGC. For the first time, a Gen 4 Pokedex metagame is going to see substantial weather play, because for the first time, we're going to have weather setters who are not banished to the shadow realm that is Ubers. Kyogre and Groudon move over. We now have Torkoal and Pelipper and Politoed bringing the weather. And this is really interesting, actually, because if you look at recent metas, for the most part, sand is the dominant weather. And it's not hard to see why, because you've got a really phenomenal setter in Tyranitar who does not need to be running a weather-centric team to be useful, which is good, which is really good. Whereas, like, really, you're not going to run Pelipper in OU generally if you're not, like, leaning into rain. You can absolutely run Tyranitar whether you're leaning into sand or not. But the biggest reason that sand has been highly competitive, if not dominant, is Excadrill. It's always been Excadrill. Excadrill is a mon with phenomenal typing, with an incredible attack stat, and with amazing dual stab and coverage. You don't need to go far if you have ground, steel, rock. Like, that's enough. That's it. On top of having rapid spin for team synergy, it is truly an all-in-one package that is not present in this game. There is one sand abuser in this game, Annabeth. Would you care to take a hazard as to who it is?
Oh, good lord. I'm trying to think. I don't run a lot of sand, and we don't have pups yet.
Yeah, we don't have Stoutland. We don't have Dracozolt. We don't have Dracovish. Anna's blinking a lot and thinking real hard, you guys.
I'm thinking real hard. You're going to have to tell me. It's late.
The de facto best sand abuser in BDSPOU, at least from a speed perspective, is Sandslash. That is the only Sand Rush Pokemon in this meta. Now, let's compare that to our friend Rain for a minute, which has like two really different setters in Politoed and Pelipper. Say what you will of either of them, like they're both flawed Pokemon, but like they fill very different roles, very different niches. You've got a Kabutops. You've got a Armaldo. You've got Ludicolo. You've got Kingdra. Right? You got Kingdra, you got Poliwrath. You have your cup floweth over with Swiftswim Pokemon. You've also got incredible electric type options, like Zapdos, who can, and Rotom, who can abuse the shit out of perfectly accurate thunders. You've also got Scizor. Swords dancing, bullet punching Scizor, who very deeply appreciates not having to worry quite so much about fire attacks. It's going to be interesting to see the progression of weather. This is going to be a rain dominated weather game, like 100%. There's an argument to be made for sun, especially in VGC style doubles, where you are going to have Venusaur and Charizard, as recent VGC has shown, a truly dominant combo wombo with the sun, not as much without G-Max Vinelash and G-Max Wildfire, but still very good, right? Like Solar Power Charizard still hits hard. Chlorophyll Venusaur still puts everything in its mom to fucking sleep. That's not nothing, but like, especially when it comes to singles, nothing is stepping to rain. Honestly, that's probably going to fuel Tyranitar's usage stats as much as anything else, is just having something to disrupt the rain teams, because they are going to be, especially in the early meta, I think they're going to be really strong and really dominant.
You're going to be seeing Cloud9 Golduck showing up just to be like, no, stop. Stop. Because you don't got that Drampa.
No, you do not have that Drampa. Although Cloud9, like Cloud9 is a limited tool to begin with, because as soon as that Pokemon leaves the field, guess what? Weather's back.
It's true, but it's better than nothing. It is. You don't have a whole lot of options.
It is better than nothing, and you're going to need something for sure. I also think that it is worth shouting out once again our boy Garchomp, as well as my boy, my sweet baby boy, Gliscor, who is coming for the first time into a metagame without widespread hidden power. Let's go. Let's go, Gliscor. We're going to have he's going to have his hidden ability. He's going to have Poison Heal, which is going to make him a stally, bulky nightmare in singles. And you better have ice natively. You better have ice stab or native ice coverage, or he's just going to live forever in front of you and piss you off.
Yeah, it's interesting how the removal of hidden power and the reduced deck size is going to put some heavy value on Pokemon like Weavile and Mamoswine and Ice Shark. The ability to hit these Pokemon that have a quad weakness to ice and are very dangerous and remove them from the field or threaten them out. Biggest problem with Weavile in that case is switching into anything.
Yeah.
But once it's out, it'll hit somebody real hard.
Yeah, I mean, Weavile's been OU for months now in the Sword and Shield metagame. And, like, there's factors there, but the biggest factor, the single biggest factor, is that you can't just slap HP Ice on everything. So having something strong with Stab Ice is genuinely helpful.
It's so wild. Like, as a point of note on that, like, when Sword and Shield were coming out, we were talking about the loss of Pursuit and how that was going to affect Weavile competitively, and it's barely been a blip.
Yeah, if anything, it's been a much bigger problem for Mon like Bisharp. But still, like, most of the really good dark types establish their niche elsewhere. Like they bring enough other things to the field that, you know, and it's not like Pursuit moved somewhere else. It's just not there. So, yep. Like, it's crying over spilt milk, right? But yeah, definitely. I think those boys are going to have a fun time. Also, I forgot to mention, but it's worth noting, there are a number of items that are staples of the competitive scene that are not currently in the game code, which are going to shake things up significantly. RIP Heavy Duty Boots, we barely got to know you. But also, also older staple favorites like the safety goggles which is going to make like Breloom and Parasect very, very happy. The Assault Vest and even our good friend Eviolite, F's in the chat for Chansey. Yeah, again, and it's possible that those items will be added down the line, but currently, at least, they do not appear to be in the game code. We have to expect that we are playing a meta without them.
Yeah, that makes a huge difference for Chansey, but honestly, there's not a lot of like really solid competitive walls. Like, it's going to be a very offensive metagame, just really? Overall.
I don't know. I would push back on that a little bit, because we're talking about a meta that has that does still have Blissey, that has Hippowdon, that has Heatran, that has Gliscor. Like, literally just off the dome piece. Like, there's walls. There's Bronzong. Like,
Bronzong is I think, one of the big losers of
yes.
recent changes, though. He ain't gonna be what he was back in Gen 4.
No, and that's very true and valid. Anything that has darker or ghost coverage is now substantially spoopier to the Zong. But also, Cresselia's in Gen 4.
Oh, that's like, fair. Fucking Cresselia.
Yeah, Cress is around. Like, you know, Dusclops is not gonna be as spooky, but that just means that Dusk Noir is gonna see more legitimate use. Like there are walls. If anything, Gen 4, like the Gen 4 meta was pretty stall heavy. I don't think that's going to be as true. I think that offense has come far enough in the years since these games were new that it's going to be a more offensive meta game, but I would still expect to see some shenanigans for sure.
I think it's really interesting like that we talk about that as like we go through like what the walls are. Like, I feel like walls back in the day, you always felt that there was an actionable way around them that was pretty easy to implement on a level that wasn't fighting against the Pecs or Ferrothor.
Or fucking Stack Attacka. Yeah.
Yeah, like, walls in modern Pokemon are just, they're very different. They really live up to the name, right? In a way that when I see a Hippowdon, I go, oh, I'm going to Grass Knot your ass. Like, that's something that I can still do. And it's, a lot of things can learn Grass Knot. A lot of things can hit it with water. Like, it's you. We can talk about Ferrothorn and fire coverage, obviously, but it's a hard nut to crack. Very much so,
for sure. I do think shifting slightly over to doubles and VGC style play, I think it's going to be really interesting to see what takes off there. Obviously, this is the first format in years where we've got no Cat Daddies, neither of them, no Lando T and no Incineroar. And I think that at least in the early meta, you're going to see a lot of people trying to replicate those roles with lesser Pokemon. Although I'm not sure there's much of anything that really fills those shoes in the Gen 4 Pokedex. Like, obviously you can run Luxray for Intimidate. And I think Luxray will actually see legitimate use in VGC style doubles just with Intimidate and Volt Switch, if nothing else, cycling it out. And you'll probably see things like definitely, especially as we've established, Rain is likely to be very powerful. Things like Ludicolo and Toxicroak with Fake Out. Weavile with Fake Out. Like, those are going to be mon that definitely see usage. But it's going to be a whole different ball game. I would definitely be on the lookout for Disquake in the early metagame, discharge earthquake combos, particularly with Zapdos, who is in, or Rotom also is a good discharge earthquake partner, alongside something like Garchomp or Gliscor, just dealing a fuck ton of damage. I also think that we are very, very, very likely to be unironically heading into a metagame where Parasect sees legitimate usage in VGC.
I thought that was the most wild thing that you've ever said.
Well, again, on the subject of looking for Pokemon that fill familiar roles, we have no Amoongus. And what role does Amoongus generally fill on a VGC team? It is a very slow Pokemon that threatens with the support moves Spore, which puts your opponent to sleep, as well as Rage Powder, which redirects them. Moves which have only gotten more powerful with the removal of Safety Goggles. And the fact that it's slow is important because it functions as punishment for opposing Trick Room.
I would be thrilled to see that. I like Parasect a lot as a Pokemon, but it is a Pokemon that I feel like lives on the edge of the community's consciousness. So it'll be really interesting to see if you're right. I hope that you are.
I don't think it is going to see usage on the scale of Amoongus by any stretch. I'm not arguing that. It's not going to be a top 10 Pokemon on whatever fan ladders exist in BDS PVGC. But I think that it is going to see legitimate use. Like it is going to be a mon that you will need to be aware of if you are playing BDS PVGC. Also, just in all competitive formats, can we talk about the glow up that our boy Azumarill has had? Because it seems like every time the game changes in literally any way, it makes Azumarill stronger. And this is not going to be any exception, because now, on top of every other benefit that he's gotten over the years, Belly Drum, Aqua Jet, Huge Power, Fairy Typing, Play Rough, he's now one of like five fairies in a limited dex.
Five fairies in a limited dex. He's going to bring over Sap Sipper, right?
Yeah.
Which is not it's not as widely used as Huge Power is, but it's still valid and a really great hidden ability.
It actually sees significant use in VGC, where Azumarill is more often going to be running a bulky Parish Song set, because it just makes it harder to kill. It can just run like Whirlpool, Parish Song, Protect, and Sub, right? And just live.
Just lullaby you to death.
Yeah, it's dumb. But yeah, no, I think Azumarill is going to have a really, really good run. Let's talk about Blastoise for a minute, okay? Particularly...
Your boy Blastoise?
My boy Blastoise, particularly in doubles. You know, obviously, like Charizard and Venusaur have definitely had the more storied runs in recent years in competitive. Like two of the most dominant Pokemon in Sword and Shield VGC. Hands down, period. No one's arguing that point. Blastoise is also good, but is clearly playing second fiddle to his Kanto starter brethren. But in BDS PVGC in particular, to be clear, I still expect Venusaur and Charizard to be very good. I'm not arguing that point. I am not saying that they won't. But we've talked about how good Rain is looking as a format. If we're assuming that in BDSP, that speed change mechanics follow what they are in Sword and Shield, which means when Tailwind's cast, boom, speeds are instantly increased. How powerful of a lead is Blastoise Pelipper, for instance, where you have your Rain Dish Blastoise, who can fake out on turn one while Pelipper sets Tailwind, and then on turn two, Pelipper U-turns out in favor of your Ludicolo or your Toxicroak or whatever, while your Blastoise just clicks Water Spout. It's budget Kyogre with Fake Out and Yawn.
I'd like to see Blastoise get a little more love than it does. I feel like they try so hard to put it on the level with the other two, and then like every generation, it just misses by a little bit.
It was really good in Sword and Shield. Like G-Max Blastoise is not anything to fuck with. It's just...
Great design, too.
It's just, unfortunately, it's not as offensive as the other two, and its G-Max capabilities are so inherently offensive in nature that... It of course it pales in comparison, especially when you consider the synergy between Charizard and Venusaur in that they both operate under the sun, whereas Blastoise assuredly does not.
Would not recommend.
Yeah, it's just one of those things. And yes, G-Max Blastoise is an incredible design, probably my favorite of the three, unironically. Like nothing to do with just how much I love Blastoise in general. I just think it's a great design.
It really, really is. I remember when we were seeing those for the first time, and it's just wild. It looks so good.
It's very cool. Yeah, I'm excited. I think that we're going to see some really cool stuff. Moxie Heracross and Moxie Honchkrow are a thing for the first time in Sinnoh, which is very exciting.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to using a Honchkrow. I love Honchkrow. I'm so excited.
Also, cannot really be overstated the fact that we are going to have access to defog to remove hazards in Sinnoh is a massive quality of life improvement, because Sinnoh, like the original Gen 4 metagame, was a metagame that, you know, with Stealth Rocks suddenly being widely available by TM, was a metagame that revolved around Rapid Spin and having a ghost type to spin block and keep your hazards on the field And the fact that that is no longer a factor, I think, really cannot be overstated.
Yeah, no disagreement there. It's so weird, like, having just gotten back to replay the original game and all of the things that are different. Steel resistance is defog. It's really wild. I'm really looking forward to the modernization overall. Like, a lot of this quality of life stuff is going to make a big difference.
Also, and this is something that, like, this is less of me making a predictive leap and more of me just observing what we've seen in Sword and Shield over the last year, right? But can we talk about the glow up that your boy Entei has seen? So Inner Focus has gone from being a dog shit ability that you would never want to being the selling point of the Pokemon, of that Pokemon, which was once the worst of the trio that it was in, and is now a strong contender for the best of the trio that it's in. Like, Suicune is still very good. There's an argument to be made. But if you had told, like, Gen 2 and Gen 3 Pokemon players that Raikou would be by far the worst of the legendary beasts, I wouldn't have believed you, certainly.
I mean, especially where Entei, for years, everyone's just been like, why just use Arcanine?
Yeah, which Arcanine, I think, will definitely see heavy use. Like, Arcanine is probably, like, the single best, like, here is your replacement Incineroar archetype, right? But Entei, notably, has Inner Focus, which means cannot be faked out. So turn one, your Entei is going to get an attack off. Like, it might be into a Protect, but it's gonna go. It's gonna hit. Secondly, Entei is a Pokemon that can run physical or special. It is better physical than it is special, but it is good both. And that is important to note because you can run it like with a fairly traditional set with like Sacred Fire, some variety of coverage, whether that be Stone Edge or Stomping Tantrum, Protect and insert fourth move here, Extreme Speed, Roar, you know, kind of whatever your heart desires. Or you can very, very easily run Entei, Choice Scarf Eruption. And you don't know which one of those you're facing until it's clicking buttons. And when Entei starts clicking buttons, you're going to have a bad fucking time. Inner Focus means that it is immune to Intimidate, so you cannot cycle Intimidates to slow it down, which is so beautiful. And notably, one of the best things about physical fire types, which if you had told me was a phrase that I would be saying even 4 years ago, I'm not sure I would have believed you because I was not a fan of physical fire types because of the recoil of Flare Blitz. But A, Entei does not have to run Flare Blitz because he has Sacred Fire. But B, and more importantly, can't be burned. Immune to Will-O-Wisp. It is impossible to slow down Entei's offense, which is incredibly powerful.
Yeah, it's some of the changes they've made over the years about certain types not being able to be burned or paralyzed make a big difference in the value of those Pokemon, particularly in VGC.
I mean, I do think that we are going to see, like to a degree, we're going to see a lot of old favorites rise back to prominence, right?
I mean, they always do.
They always do. I think that Infernape is going to have, like, a gangbusters year with the far reduced competition for fire types. And, you know, again, Infernape never fell far. And with the smaller field, I think he's going to climb back up pretty rapidly and likely be a staple in OU. I think that in VGC, we're going to see a lot of Hitmontop. Obviously, who was Incineroar before Incineroar was Incineroar is probably the single best Pokemon that is able to cycle Intimidates and fake out and do all of the other Incineroar things. Although, obviously, Arcanine, again, and Luxray also, to some degree or another, fill those archetypes. Heatran is going to be very good. Heatran's always very good, you guys. That's Heatran ain't going nowhere ever for any reason. Yeah, it'll be interesting. I think, and I could be way the fuck off base here. This is my spicy pick. This is Steven's spicy pick for this conversation. I think Leafeon's going to be better than most people expect it to be. I'm not saying it's going to be good. That's a different thing. That's a different statement. I think Leafeon is going to be better than you might expect it to be. Because again, like there is going to be a lot of room for counterplay to weather. And being able to run like a really fast and really physically offensive Sun Sweeper, I think has a lot of inherent usefulness. I mean, this is a mon that you can run with Chlorophyll, with Swords Dance, Leaf Blade, and Knockoff, which ain't nothing.
Nope, it's not. That's actually pretty slick.
Base 110 attack. There's value here, and a lot of it is value that we don't normally see in the high tiers, which is, I think, the most interesting parts of these types of games. Like we talked about this when Dexit happened, and everybody was so upset. And I was like, actually, like, this is a potential for a really cool and interesting metagame. We're right back there. This is also the potential for a really cool and interesting metagame, although we have to look for it, because it's also potential for fucking Garchomp and Zapdos to just run competitive for another year.
I mean, always. They're so good.
They're very good. They're very good, actually. No arguments here. The other thing that I just really wanted to point out, I guess, is there was a lot of question regarding BDSP as to whether we were going to see the triumphant return of the Battle Frontier. And if you haven't looked into it, I am sorry to be the bearer of bad news and tell you that we are not. There is no Battle Frontier hiding in the base code of Brilliant Diamond and Shining Pearl. It is possible that it's coming. It's possible that there will be DLC Battle Frontier, although I know better enough at this point to tell you not to hold your breath on that particular front, but it could happen. That being said, we are getting a battle tower, and it does appear that for the first time in several generations, that battle tower is seeing like significant improvement. It is substantially different from the battle tower that we've been dealing with since Pokemon X and Y, which is a welcome change. I haven't looked deeply into those differences yet. I figure I'll leave some things to be surprised by. But a lot of people have said that they've been very pleasantly surprised by how much revamping and upgrading the Battle Frontier has received on that front. The battle tower. Battle tower. There's no Battle Frontier. F's in the chat. Rip for our boy, the Battle Frontier. We are also seeing really, really challenging rematch battles. Every gym leader, as well as the Elite Four and Champion, are going to have not one, but two rounds of rematches, which get increasingly more difficult, with better statted, moved and itemed Pokemon for you to battle, culminating in a Cynthia who beats out HeartGold SoulSilver's Red for the single hardest in-game NPC boss in all of Pokemon, which honestly, yes, Queen, slay. It could not possibly be more deserved, frankly.
As somebody who faced her down 3 hours ago, bring it on. what that's really exciting. I love when they have that stuff in there. You and I talked a lot when we were doing HeartGold SoulSilver about what the best things about those games were. And a lot of the rematch gym fights were it.
Yeah, like, no, I totally agree. And I will actually, I will take the maybe unpopular stance that if the choice was between these style rematches and a Battle Frontier, I'm glad we got the rematches, because more players are going to experience them. Like, a significantly larger number of players will rematch the gym leaders than will go out of their way to do battle facilities. Like that's just true. And I'm glad that that content exists. I think that it's really memorable and it's really fun. That being said, I do also still want a Battle Frontier. And I think that this is a game that gives a really great opportunity, both because Ilka has shown through these rematches that they are capable and motivated to create interesting and challenging encounters, and because BDSP, as we all know, is a game that is not going to have an official competitive ladder. All player versus player competitive in BDSP is going to be like fan curated. It's going to be community ladders, which is fine. We do that on Pokemon Showdown all the time. But I want a reason to take advantage of all the great training quality of life features and to want to train teams on cartridge in BDSP. And the single best way for Ilka to foster that without instituting a ladder, which I also wish they would do that, but I don't think that's entirely their decision, right? Would be to give us a battle frontier, give us an in-game challenge to make us want to bring our very best team. I think that that's DLC worthy. I would pay for a DLC battle frontier. I am saying that right now. I am putting my wallet where my mouth is. Ilka, if you make it, I will buy it.
I think a lot of people would, honestly. It's been one of the most requested features over and over again. And we never get it, but everybody always asks.
So let me ask then, Annabeth. We haven't seen a Battle Frontier since Generation 4, since Platinum, Heart Gold, and Soul Silver. What would you want from a modern Battle Frontier? Like pie in the sky, Imagineering, what would you ask them to design for us?
Oh my goodness. That's such a loaded question. I'm just always looking for more challenging solo content in a variety of styles. I think since Gen 4, we've seen introductions of different styles of battles. Not that anyone is the most thrilled about triple battles, but those are really fascinating in how they work and function. I didn't do all of the Battle Frontier in Gen 4. Did you ever 100% complete it?
I haven't. That's on my checklist of old Pokemon game shit to do. I fully intend to 100% the Battle Frontiers in both Emerald and Platinum. Like, that's on my list. But for me personally, number one, like, new upgraded Battle Tower, very good start. Yes, please. Thank you, Papa Ilka. We love to see it. Like it, love it, gotta have it. On the topic of the Gym Leader rematches, Like those battles are always so powerful. And for that reason, I think one of the best battle facilities we've ever gotten from a Pokemon game that was not a part of a Battle Frontier itself, but easily could be if that concept were revisited, was the World Tour in Black and White 2. Being able to see all of those old familiar faces with powerful in-game teams and battle against them in that format instead of just nameless, faceless youngster Joey. How the fuck? Billy, you're like four. How do you have a competitively trained team in this fucking tree? Billy, how? How am I supposed to? You're breaking my immersion, Billy. God damn it. Get out of here.
Billy has never conquered the fucking Elite Four, but holy shit. His team is great.
He's stacked like a mother. This is nepotism at its finest. This is Red's fucking cousin is what it is. But the World Tour was, I think, the single best battle facility we've ever had because we had attachment and stakes to the people we were fighting inside of it. And I think that'd be a great place to start, even if it's a fairly limited selection. And also, if we're talking about Battle Frontier as DLC, you would want to include available Pokemon in that DLC. So you would be expanding the Pokedex by a selection. And this would be a really good way to curate that, to be like, okay, well, we're bringing Clay in from Unova. So we're going to add in Excadrill and Crocodile and blah, 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 and make those Pokemon available in the game as well. I think has a really natural like tie into it. I also just really love rental team facilities. I recognize that they are even more random than your standard battle facility is, which can be frustrating, but they are content that you cannot simply out meta, right? You can't just go, well, I know exactly the strategies that this AI uses, so I'm going to build the perfect team. Even if you break things down to that base fundamental level, you're still rolling the dice as far as what Pokemon are available to you. And that makes them like really infinitely repeatable. Like we've seen really good rental facilities in the last two Pokemon entries in the form of the Battle Agency in Ultra Sun, Ultra Moon, which I think a lot of people skipped over, but was a really good battle facility that relied on rental Pokemon, as well as the Max Adventures in the Crown Tundra of Sword and Shield, which again was infinitely repeatable because you couldn't just bring in your level 100 perfect IV EV trained Zamazenta and just fucking Behemoth Blade everything until you get your fucking legendary. You had to think because you are more or less on an even playing field by virtue of rental Pokemon. I think those are always a big hit, and I would definitely want to see one of those return, whether it is a return to the classic Battle Factory formula or something that spices that up a little bit. The third thing that is kind of on my Battle Frontier wish list is I want inverse battles back, and I shouldn't. Like, I recognize objectively that is not a thing I should want, but I fucking do.
You fucking heard it here, folks. We requested triple battles and inverse battles, and everyone's gonna hate us.
Look, I think that if it's in a facility by itself where it is sequestered and just every battle inside this place is going to be an inverse, which gives you an entirely different metagame to theory craft around, that's really fucking interesting. How good is Avalug suddenly in an inverse battle format, right? Where everything ice is weak to, it suddenly resists with its monster defensive stats. Suddenly, that's a fucking Pokemon, right? I don't know. I think that having a facility that deals exclusively in inverse battles would be really, really interesting and fun.
Yeah, I think that that's a really cool idea. The only thing I think of when I think of inverse battles is this past season when Celeste accidentally engaged in an inverse battle and almost got Skarmory killed.
It was just like, oh shit, oh fuck, I'm weak to everything. Why, God, why? Yeah, That's a thing that happened, for sure.
I mean, she had a team full of walls. Like, if she was going to lose something, that would have been the time.
But yeah, Ilka, if you're listening, and I'm sure you are, we are, after all, like, the premier podcast within the Pokemon.
Oh,
yeah, fuck off. Fuck off, Steven. Yeah. But if this happens to reach the ears of someone who has literally any authority to make literally anything happen, Consider making a Battle Frontier. I think that would be the bow on top that would really make BDSP even more special and give it more legs. Like, a lot of people are talking about BDSP with the verbiage of, well, this is a nice little bridge game to last us until Legends comes out. And for a lot of people, that's what it's going to be. And that's fine. But it doesn't have to be just that. Like, this could be a game that people are still playing concurrently with Generation 9 when it comes out, if it's made well enough. People are still playing Platinum. Like, hard. Like really hard. I would really love to see that extra level of infinitely repeatable content to really tie it all up.
Yeah, I agree. Like, when you think about Sinnoh too, you think about how many years the community has been like, give us a Sinnoh remake. Give us a fucking Sinnoh remake. Like, we're here. Do something good with it. Except that it's the Pokemon community, so 3/4 of them will be shitty regardless of what they do.
Yeah, big fucking mood. And on that note, I think that's where our show is going to be called today. Thank you so much for joining us today, guys. We will be back soon. Soon, TM. Tentatively soon. To talk about BDSP again in the aftermath, after we've had a chance to play it and really sink our teeth into it and come up with some initial thoughts. We'll be back to sit down and talk about the game and what it does well and what it does not so well and where we'd like to see things go from here.
Also turkey. Because Thanksgiving is right around the corner.
Thanksgiving. I'm going to be 35 years old, you guys. I can feel every bone in my body turning to dust as we speak.
It doesn't get better at 36, I hate to tell you.
Oh, no. But yeah, we'll be back before the turn of the year, certainly, to talk about BDSP. And there will certainly be a ton of Legends news to go over as well. And as long as there is Pokemon news that is exciting to us, we will sit down and talk about it for an hour to give you guys that good hashtag content. As always, you can follow me personally at BBRJolly on Twitter.
And I'm at Incidentally Anna.
I do want to thank everyone for joining us today. I want to give a very special thank you, as always, to my co-host, Annabeth Meservier, and the currently absent Celeste Dreyer. For Blastburn Radio, I am Stephen Charbonneau. Thank you for listening. We will see you next time.
See you next time, folks.
Blastburn Radio is a production of Challenge Accepted Media. This episode was produced by Stephen Charbonneau. If you enjoy Blastburn Radio, you can support us at patreon.com/challengeacceptedmedia. Pokemon and all related games and characters are the trademark and property of Nintendo, Game Freak, and the Pokemon Company. Opening music in today's episode includes Game On by Fishy off the OC Remix album, The Missing No Tracks. Check out this great album at missingno.ocremix.org. Battle music in today's episode provided by Glitch X City. Check out her work on YouTube or SoundCloud at Glitch X City. Closing music in today's episode is Professor Sycamore's theme remix, also by Glitch X City. Design work for Blastburn Radio Season 8 provided by Rachel Mondragon at Rachichu, Nathan at Fiery Dance, and Chisai at Chisai236. Check out their other work or contact them for commissions on Twitter. Blastburn Radio and its hosts are solely responsible for its content.